This is Will's Band of the Week for May 24th, 2020. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett from his back porch.
Yes.
I think that's where we are. That's what it looked like. You were on a Zoom call. It looked like a back porch.
Yep.
And we also have Chris from the Ron Swanson Studios.
Hey, here I am.
Do you have a name for that, by the way, Chris? I thought Ron Swanson Studios was as good as I could think of.
Nope, that's what it is. For those who can't see on the video, which there's no reason why you should. I do have a Ron Swanson cardboard cutout from the show Parks and Recreation for those of you in America. For those of you not in America.
Yeah.
But yes, he's. I got it as a Christmas gift a few years ago. And so now he's perched behind me.
Yeah, watching over you. But you're not drinking Lagavulin, so he probably, I don't know what he thinks about Balvenie.
So we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but is the idea that this will be something that people can watch too?
I don't think so. I think this is for our own eyes only.
Right. It does facilitate conversation better when you can see people.
Yeah. So we're going to try to, I'm switching between screens a lot. I'm a multi-screen guy. Yeah. I've got the recording screen, the video with you guys, and the music screen. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Pretty high tech,
sophisticated crazy stuff going on. So, we're here because we are going to discuss Barrett's top albums of the decade, and that's exciting because I wasn't sure that you were going to do it. But then you must have just thought everybody else is doing it, might as well do it too.
Yeah, I kept putting it off. It wasn't that I thought it was an unpleasant thing to try to do. It's just I never felt inspired to get started.
It did take you like 3 months to do this. Like, there's a whole team of scientists,
yeah,
ready to put this together. Like, yeah,
most of the other correspondents just gonna pick stuff. I can't do it that way.
You have like a sweatshop of people like listening to records all on headphones.
Yeah,
you're paying them like 20 cents an hour.
It's his staff. Yeah, like the big podcasts. You know, like NPR and Sound Opinions. They have these big staffs. They probably have to filter down from 500 selections down to 20 and down to 6 and whatever, you know, just, you know, the filtering process. So probably Barrett had to have his team do that.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. But then in the end, it just comes down to me laying in my bed, looking at my phone and grasping at straws. So that's kind of how that one went. All that work was just kind of wasted.
I'm pretty confident that you didn't do a numerical system like Anurag came up with.
That's what he did?
Yeah, he had some kind of, he literally developed a scoring system. So an internal proprietary scoring system that he, you know, said he might use in the future for his end of year lists.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he's like I'm showing that I did not listen to Anurag's podcast, but I didn't listen to any of them because I didn't want to be influenced.
Well, that's kind of fun.
I did get some peeks. I saw a couple things. Just, you know, I wasn't that zealous about staying away, but I didn't listen to them. I was trying to kind of stay in the dark. But I saw.
Yeah, I've actually listened to all of them.
You have?
Yes, and I'm picking up some good stuff. Like I actually have only listened to the first half of Nick and Jeremiah's.
Yeah.
So I haven't listened to the top five. But tell Nick I love Fu Manchu.
Yeah, he's got some really fun stuff.
Yeah, some heavy, bottom heavy rock. It's pretty good. I listened to it on my on one of my bike rides. So, yeah, yes. I'm picking up some good stuff.
Yeah, Barrett has 4 artists in his top 10 that have been mentioned before.
Uh-oh.
Which is kind of cool.
I'm sure I can tell you who they are.
And I think three of them are the same album, and maybe one or two of them are a different album. Wait, one?
I bet two of them are on my list.
Two, three.
I haven't gotten any list. I have no idea what's about to come my way. And by the way, for the listeners, there's absolutely no reason I should be on this podcast. I'm just here because I love Coffee Bear, and I want to offer snide comments on his list. So here we go.
Well, that's a good enough reason to be on, you know, I think. I mean, he gets his own show, so having two of us to, you know, berate his selections, that should be enough, right?
Right. I'm just here to take up time and badger him throughout the process.
Do we want to do any preliminaries? Barrett, do you have a top 10 live shows of the decade?
No, I can't pull that out of my ass like that fast.
Yeah.
I didn't get any thought at all.
It's about the only thing you can't.
I haven't. Yeah. Chris, have you done that? Have you looked at, do you keep any kind of a, like a,
oh,
you know,
God,
catalog
no.
of live shows?
As we've discussed, I like barely know what shows I've even seen. There's some shows that I don't even remember seeing. So.
Yeah, and you don't keep track the same way, you know. Craig obviously does.
I could. I'm one of these people. I keep all my concert receipts, so I have all my ticket stubs. But you don't really have ticket stubs anymore. They're all just like on your phone or whatever. So
yeah,
do you keep little pieces of paper that you print out and bring, or what?
I suppose I could.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably have credit card receipts from shows that I bought tickets to.
Yeah.
There was one great, great show that I saw this decade that I was reminded of because there was a video put out. It's been making its rounds in the indie rock world.
Spice Girls?
No. It was Peter Hook and the Light played the entire catalog of Joy Division in, I think, 2015 in London, and they put that video out, and it's pretty amazing. They played for like 2 hours and 45 minutes or something. And then I was reminded about how great that show was in Madison that I saw a couple of years ago, which is just, I've talked about this before, but it's like a guy almost forming a cover band of his old band because he's singing. He never sang for the band. He had a falling out with his bandmates. So it's just the bass player and a whole new band, but God, does he ever pull it off? I just think it's great. So I wanted to throw that in there as a live show highlight.
Yeah. Well, we have a death. We don't have a jingle for this, but death anniversary of the week.
Death anniversary?
Yeah. What's that?
Ian Curtis died 40 years and 3 days ago.
Oh, wow. God.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's why they put out that live show at that time. It may have been that anniversary.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyway, and it also reminded me of how long Peter Hook has been touring with his own band without New Order for, you know, like 5 years now. No wonder they're so good, but they were good way back then. So just amazing. So when live music happens again, if he's still playing, I'm going to see him again.
No reason you should get worse with time.
Well, unless the effects of aging finally take over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully you won't get coronavirus. Should we do a coronavirus update? I mean, I suppose it'd be...
Play the jingle. I mean, we paid Nicholas like $5,000.
Yeah, I know. We've got to make it worthwhile for that investment. So, yeah. Okay, here we go.
It's time for the very serious Corona Report. My Corona.
Yeah, just the right mix of, that's the word I'm looking for, lighthearted gravity to it, right?
Yeah, lighthearted gravity. Well, we know Chris got a really nice bike. So you're getting some miles on that thing, Chris?
Yeah, a bike that that was featured in USA Today. Like I wrote a thing for USA Today, and they sent me an email that says, we need a picture of your bike, of you standing by your bike. And I had like 5 minutes left of daylight. And so my daughter and I rushed out and took a picture of me with my bike, and it was featured in the nation's largest newspaper.
There you go. Was it in the print version? I think I saw the video version of it. Well, you posted it. I saw that one, but was it in the print version?
I don't think it was in the print version. So yeah. People staying at hotels were unable to see it. The thing is, that bicycle, I took it back to the shop because it just wasn't. It was like slipping out of gear a lot, and they said, "Yeah, this was way out of whack," and so they just gave me a brand new bike. So I actually needed a whole new one.
Wow. Well, they stood by their product. Good job, Trek from Waterloo, Wisconsin, right? Did Mary Burke do the exchange for you personally?
She did not personally. high marks to Trek, though. It's an amazing bike. I never saw myself as a bicyclist. I was called bicyclists the Spandex Mafia because they always hog the streets and stuff.
I remember in the past there being, I mean, we've known each other for almost 20 years. There being little times where maybe the possibility of riding a bike somewhere came up. And I just remember Chris as being very not into it, right? In fact, when Craig came last year, we took a long bike ride. And it's like, does maybe Chris want to come along? I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't think he even has a bike. But now...
Yeah, now he would do it.
You'd be the pace setter out there with your...
Right. Now I'm Lance Armstrong. No, we all went on a bike ride, a long bike ride a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
26 miler. And Will was the one setting the pace. He was blowing by us.
Yeah, that was something. He was the one.
Yeah, he's the one that's fit.
You know, we're just like looking at the butterflies and stuff and having a nice little leisurely
that's
ride.
Right. We're like the Wicked Witch of the West. We have like our big baskets on our bikes and stuff.
Yeah.
Just out for fun. And like we got Lance Armstrong ahead of us.
I think you guys just.
Yellow jersey on the whole time.
I think you guys just. It was the motivation.
By the Buffaloes.
It was the promised land of the Riley Tavern that that motivated me. So
that's right, Will. Before you got on, Will and I were talking about whether we can bring back Le Tigre, whether we can bring them some more revenue by doing the podcast from Le Tigre. Maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'll be a big draw there, I think.
Yeah, so I was saying that place is so small. What does he got? Does he have a dozen seats at the bar? I mean, it's about that size, right?
Maybe there's a dozen seats, maybe a couple more than that, but then you've got... three tables on the one side of the jukebox that can fit another. You could put 12 people there, I suppose, but that would be a lot.
You mean with his distancing?
Yeah, altogether you could probably get 30 people in there.
Okay, right, so maybe we could
sell the place out.
Maybe 10.
Podcast
10 when if they want to do distancing. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see, right, when places start opening up.
Right.
Well, should we get to the music? Probably should. We could.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, we could.
There's no avoiding it at this point.
And you know what? It's just kind of sad. This is the last of the decade lists now, I think. Grant actually gave me one that listed 10 artists in no particular order, and it looked really fun. And he said he's not sure if he wants to discuss it publicly or not. So I don't know. It's kind of out there, and it's fun, but. And we never heard about whether Wilson wanted to do one.
Would Grant do one with Wilson?
I mean, theoretically, but I don't know if Grant wants to, so we'll have to find out. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe. It seems like Wilson's would be from the 60s, though, right? He's to the top eight of 68.
He can put something together. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. So I guess we'll say, like, this is the end of the official ones. Yeah. And so it's so fun when you guys send me the lists. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Because it's always like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense that he would have that on his list. And then, but there's always a few surprises like, oh, yeah, that one. You know, it's just cool. It's very fun. Very fun. So
there's a lot of
the list, right?
What was that?
Chris has not seen the list.
He has not.
I haven't seen nothing, no.
Okay. Well, then I want to start off number 10. Just playing the music so I can watch Chris's reaction.
Oh, that'll be fun. Let's do that.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready?
But it's good TV for me, so.
Yeah.
Here at number 10, the Mystery Album by the Mystery Guest.
A Kinski assassin blew a hole in my chest. Now I walk about with a dream bullet vest. A seaworthy vessel for the sperm-headed brain. Mother twin Genesis went down with the plane. Kinski assassins of angels in Athens. Who sank my battleship? I sank my battleship. Who sank my battleship? I sank my battleship. Good note this pacifist. Holy monoga masturbate as a whole.
That's right.
Kinski assassins of angels in Athens. Of angels in Athens. White left off beta, swearing truth but not facts. Annihilators that dupe and distract more and more.
I will always have Paris. I will always have Paris.
Kinski assassins of angels in Athens. Australian made nibblers when the steam pocket slacks. Back the jacuzzi while they'll fondle your ass. Suicide dumplings dropping testicle bombs. Kick-ups and technicolor, talk to your moms. Kinski assassins, double agents in Athens. Who sank my battleship? I sank my battleship. Who sank my battleship? I sank my battleship. Narcissist, masochist, polymonogamous.
Yeah.
Oh, my absolute favorite. It.
Yeah, it's one of Chris's long time loves, Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti.
Yes, and I knew it was
2012's Mature Themes. The song, obviously, Kinski Assassin.
Obviously,
yeah.
What did Chris had a name for Ariel Pink? It was like Herman Munster Rock or something.
No, it was like something Dracula or like a vampire pajama party.
Dracula pajama party, was that it?
Yes, yeah, it sounds like one of those Halloweens. Yes. So it's like, yeah, it's like the Wolfman's colonoscopy or something. Like,
oh, maybe it was Wolfman pajama party. But it was very funny.
Anyway, yeah, that's great.
I like your description. I don't care. You can mock me and stuff. To me,
I'm not mocking. I'm just going to mute my microphone right now.
Oh, mine. Like, I'll listen to yours and I'll just mock you in person. For me, it's more of a public shaming that I'm going through, which is a bit hard to take, but that's okay.
I'm muting my mic and you can say whatever you want. There's no mocking here.
He's muting his mic.
I don't care. I don't know. Something about all of the music that he put out in the 2010s. I think there are only three albums or maybe four.
Yeah, I was going to say there were more than one good album, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the Bobby Jameson one was the last one. I think that was 3 years ago. That easily could have made it. But to be honest, the song Kinski Assassin is what put it over the top for me. Such a what are the kids called? That's a banger, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It slaps.
Yeah. I finally got the video of you guys in front of me now so I can see you. So it's a little more personal now. Okay, feels more personal.
Nice. But I just learned this, but they consider him, who's they? Whoever, like Wikipedia editors, right? That's who they is.
Right.
Put him under the category of hypnagogic pop, which, according to them, kind of evokes cultural memory and nostalgia for the popular entertainment of the past, especially the 80s and 90s, blah, 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 and just sort of emphasizing the sort of the decay of physical media and I don't know. It's like it's not obviously not very serious. It's
well, the Who Sunk My Battleship line is definitely evocative of being a youngster and playing totally. Battleship.
It's commercials. Can you imagine a board game having a commercial today? Maybe there is one. I don't think so. But, yeah, it was a different time. So, exactly. That's exactly the kind of thing that I like about it. It's a nostalgia for a thing, really, that never exactly happened, you know?
This isn't the music of my childhood. There's something kind of nostalgic about his music, right? It's like it's goofy and nostalgic at the same time.
Right. And it's also... I think that he's a bit like Stephen Merritt from
magnetic fields.
Fields where he's got a real talent for melody and just songwriting in general. And if he applied himself in a different way, if his interests were lied in different areas, he could make more money. Maybe not like get rich, but he could write pop songs.
Yeah.
For fans. Well, I think he's that talented. I really love this album. I love that song. It's funny. It's fun. You can't listen to it and like have a frown on your face. If you do, you're either named Christian Schneider or, oops, we're not supposed to say last names, right?
That's fine.
Christian Schneider.
I've been telling people to buy my book on this damn podcast.
Oh, that's right.
We'll need to know my name for that.
Yeah.
How about that one time I divulged your social security number, though? That was probably
yeah.
Not about I ended it. Up having to give so many people money. My bank account number?
Sorry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I have no comment on whether Chris's social security number is 373-92-2111. It might not be that. So, you know, just don't try that.
Yeah.
Hey,
dude, I just thought of something here. Speaking of that.
Yeah.
Could we get a little corner on the dark web and give out fake social security numbers and then tell the banks, right?
So yeah.
When somebody tries to open up an account and they give this number, it's like, bang, I got this number from Will's Band of the Week. It was a sting. You're busted. Right?
What?
Okay.
Now for a bit of breaking news while we're doing this, I just got followed on Twitter and then a response to a tweet I did earlier today by Hazel English.
Really? Good.
Yes. She followed me and then... retweeted my tweet and then responded to it with heart, smiley face, heart.
Wow.
So
okay.
We'll probably discuss Hazel English at some point, I would hope. But
I guess we're
she's
have
a great
to.
Artist and now a follower of mine
gonna,
on Twitter.
We're going to have to now. We're getting a backlog now because there's so many great things. There's a lot of good music we've been listening to. So, but of course.
I've got a list of like five bands I'd like to talk about.
Yep. Yeah, me too. Okay. Barrett, one thing I'll say about the upcoming... The next, I don't know, next few on your list, you got to earn it to make Barrett's list. You need to be basically an accomplished indie rock veteran. You can't be just some one-off flash in the pan. You know, you got to earn your way onto Barrett's list, and I think these next few are going to prove that.
Yeah, would,
is that fair?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that I don't think this was one that made anybody's list.
This artist made somebody else's list, a different album.
Can I guess who it is?
Sure, you can guess.
It is Honor Rock.
Nope. Should I tell you?
I can't think of any other correspondence, so yeah.
Jason.
Okay, yeah.
So tell us about number 9.
Number 9 is Deer Hunter, 2010. The album is Halcyon Digest. This is another one where I could have picked a number of their albums. And this one, I think I picked because maybe only because I know it the best. It gets played a lot at the coffee shop. All the, baristas seem to like it. So, the song I picked is Desire Lions.
Thank you.
Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
Nine. When this album came out, I remember listening to it. I used to, like, at my old job, go for long walks and listen to an album. I was like, I don't get this, because it got really, really great reviews. I didn't like it at all. And it wasn't until hearing one of their later albums that I started to really like. And then I went back and realized that I had been wrong. And so I can admit when I was wrong, I was wrong. And now look at this. It's in my top 10.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
You clip that audio clip, the I was wrong, and just like have that queued up, ready to go.
The I was wrong jingle?
Yes.
Yeah. Nicholas could make one of those.
You know what? No, I reject that. If he wants to do it, make an I was wrong. Play it before everything that Chris says.
We honestly should have like a recurring, like, I was wrong, because we're wrong about stuff all the time. Like, there's all kinds of stuff I go back to and like, yeah, I was wrong.
Yeah.
This is better than I thought. Maybe next week I'll like Ariel Pink.
You might. Who knows?
You might.
I might.
Okay.
I'll do my best.
Well,
I'll try to get you to like it, but it's going to be a tough one.
I think that one reason that the critics like Deer Hunter a lot, I'm going to give the critics some credit. Maybe I shouldn't, but for the same reason that you mentioned, Barrett, that you listen to it once and you're like, eh, whatever, I'm not into this. There's something about that band, isn't there, that they have, there's something about it being just a little bit abstract, so that
right.
when you listen to it a few times, then it really, the layers get sort of uncovered or something. Something about it.
Yeah. It's like, it's catchy, but in a sneaky way.
Yeah, right. Right? That's a good way to put it.
I'm just kind of rephrasing what you said. So, yeah, at first it's like, whatever. It doesn't. It sounds. It's not like the most energetic thing going. It's pretty laid back. It's kind of easy to let it sink into the background and not really fully immerse yourself in it. So
yeah.
That's maybe what's happening to me. But then, like a lot of albums that I like, it starts off with really liking one song, or maybe even a part of one song. Then you like another one, and blah, 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 then it all fills in. So that's kind of how the band was in a general way for me, where it's like, I never really thought about it, but I think like Deer Hunter is one of my favorite bands now.
Yeah, how did that happen? It snuck up on you, right? Yeah. Cool.
Number nine.
I think
what do you think, Chris?
Chris, yeah, you have to give your approval or disapproval now.
That's why you're here, dude.
Deer Hunter is one of my favorite bands that I've never actually listened to.
Oh.
Like, so I listened to Jason's and I listened to yours, and both times I'm like, I should really go back and listen to Deer Hunter, and yeah. I haven't yet. Yeah. So
yeah.
But yeah, I'm very open to the idea of Deer Hunter.
All right. That sounds good.
All right.
Okay. Speaking of indie rock veterans, number eight.
Yeah, even doubly veterans here.
Yep.
In 2012, Spoon put out an album called They Want My Soul. And I'd been listening to them at that point for, 10 years or whatever. And I liked them, but it was kind of, sort of they had a lot of albums and I maybe didn't need any more of them. I was happy with what I knew. This one came out, though, and I think it was Wilson getting into it, mostly through an episode of Song Exploder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
cool. You guys
cool.
have listened to that and talked about that before.
On occasion, yeah.
Yeah. And you just kind of learn little things about the band. And I can't even remember what the song that they did was. But they talked about things that, were specific to this song, but also just sort of about themselves in general. Like one thing that I can't shake is this thing where Britt Daniel, is it Daniel or Daniels?
I think it's Daniel with no S.
Yeah. He said, we like to record our vocals really dry. And I hadn't heard that term before, but... Will, you obviously have. You're like a music guy. And I kind of looked it up and, it's just sort of like without effects and, oh, wow, cool. And they are. They're all really, really dry. And so it was fun to learn that and fun to go back in the catalog and confirm, yes, that is true. All of the vocals are very dry. And I think that's the case on this song, too. I picked one called Inside Out. Thank you.
smash. And I won't be this soldier.
Spoon, number
sort of classic
eight.
Will's band of the week moment that Craig would appreciate because he talks about this a lot. The thing that you brought up to illustrate the song isn't actually what happened in that particular song. So
it was recorded dry, but they added a little bit. There's just a little bit of little like short delay or something. Or maybe like small room reverb,
something like that.
But yeah, the vocal is very immediate in the sense that, and there are bands that do it the other way around. There's some bands that have a lot of the instrumentation dry, and then they pile the reverb on the vocals. You know, so there's all kinds of different things you can do. But I'll say that I think the bass sound on that is great. And that's one fun thing about Spoon is that you can tell that they take a lot of care in their craft, in their recording, and in their. The one time I saw them live was at Lollapalooza in like 2015 or something. The only time I went to Lollapalooza, I saw Spoon. They were just super good. Like the, it's not that easy to sound good, right, in a stadium setting, right. And so and they did. It was clear that they put a lot of care into their mix and their sound and everything. And yeah, so that was how many albums did they have this decade? Probably at least three, right? They haven't been coming that often, but
they did like. Yeah, this was 2012. I think they had one 2 years later, then 2017, and that was it. They might have had one in 2010. No, I don't think so. So, yeah, you know, they're obviously indie rock vets and stuff, but what's unique about them is that there just aren't any just like, how would you describe them? And somebody's like, what is Spoon? What kind of a band is that? Just a rock band.
Right. Totally.
Rock band.
Yeah.
They're not, they're in the indie rock world or whatever. They're not an indie rock band. They're not a hard rock band. They're not anything but just rock band.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They seem like a band that could easily slide into the mainstream. Like totally. Just, yeah. So 2010 was Transference. 2014 was They Want My Soul. And 2017 was Hot Thoughts.
Oh, yes.
So there you go.
So I had a couple of years wrong there.
So this one was They Want My Soul 2012, right?
I said 2012, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're close.
Close?
2014.
Yeah, oh, 2014. Okay. I was
live fact-checking of Chris.
So I updated.
I'm the journalist. I got to get stuff right.
It's terrible when you update your software and it gets worse. So when my previous software would show the date of release of everything on the playlist, and this doesn't. So my music journalism has just taken a turn for the worse.
No, so that's too bad.
Yeah.
So I got a pants on fire on this one.
But, yeah, pants on fire.
Yes.
That's okay. I do not.
Oh,
care.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Moving up, right? Moving on up.
Yeah. So,
I have more to say about Spoon.
I think that's pretty solid, pretty good. Number seven, another indie rock veteran, and another repeat performance. I mean, this is an album that.
Did you guys hear what I was saying for a sec?
I don't know.
I had just lost everybody for.
Oh no! Go ahead. I
think we're all good. Did we miss a golden remark?
No, I just said any other comments, and then.
Gone? Oh, okay. All right.
So there were no other
comments?
No,
there weren't. Nope.
Okay.
Okay.
Motion passes.
All right.
All right.
Here we go.
There being no objections, we move on to number
seven.
Six.
Let me check out my Roberts Rules of Order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There, huh?
All right. Here we go. Okay. We're up to number seven. And this is an album that when I heard it, I just thought, this is like a major album. This is really significant. And then I didn't really, I don't know why, but I listened to it a few times and really liked it, but I kind of didn't go back to it. But this is an artist that, like, everything she does is like, seems important, right?
Totally.
And this is the second appearance for this album, also on Jason's list. So you guys must have been listening to this at the coffee shop.
Well, yes, that's true. Hold on. Yeah, he left in 2012, so he had 1 year to listen to this because it came out in 2011. So we probably did listen to it together at the coffee shop.
Do you think Chris knows what we're talking about now?
I do not.
Okay.
It's PJ Harvey's Let Ooh. People Shake.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which, yeah, I really like it. And I still play it a lot at the coffee shop. I'm not sure how many other, the baristas these days are so young. They're all born in like 1999 and 2001.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were like 10 and is maybe 12.
Yeah.
So none of them knew it and they don't really have a reason to go back right now and listen to PJ Harvey or discover it until, you know, some of them that are more adventuresome will discover it later in life or whatever, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the moment, I'm the only one that's really playing it, maybe me and Jay. And this album is super great. Let England Shake. And the song that I picked, one thing I really like about it, it's called The Glorious Land. The song itself is really cool. But then there's just sort of like a trumpet that comes in completely out of time, having no relation to this. Like, they just threw it in there at a random time. And it's kind of like a sort of like a fox hunt sort of a sound, like a horn playing a fox hunter's little theme. I don't know what it is, but the effect is really exciting to me, and that's why I picked it. So it's The Glorious Land from 2011's Let England Shake.
PJ Harvey.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. You know, you were already on a good indie rock cred roll, but if you put PJ Harvey on your list, that's total indie rock cred right there.
Yeah. I got to say, though, I'm a little, looking back, reviewing my list, it's a little safe. I'm a little playing a little bit safe.
It's great stuff, though. It's just, it's awesome. So, yeah. There's...
I don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
I would say Ariel Pink isn't that safe. I don't think you're going to find him on a whole lot of lists.
That's true. There's a couple more here, Chris, I'll tell you.
Pretty,
I'm gone. Bye, guys. Hold up.
It's pretty avant-garde, I think.
There are a couple more coming up, too, where I don't think you played it too safe. So, no worries.
But, you know, these lists are kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be the guy that in 1970 is, like, making his best of the 60s lists. And then you look at it, you know, 30 years later, and it's like, what the hell is this shit? Like, literally nobody's ever heard of any of these things.
Yeah.
What is the point of that? These are things that I think will actually, you know, I don't know about Ariel Pink. I'm going to say stand on the test of time. I think these are going to be – a lot of these things I'm talking about are going to be – at least the artists will be fondly remembered in the future.
Yeah, we hope so.
So I kind of erred on the side of that, although, you know, obviously I don't really care that much about being wrong. Like, that's not a thing that – is gonna bother me, but
who's gonna tell you you're wrong? Nope, wrong pick.
Yeah,
yeah,
incorrect.
Yeah. No, yep. I've looked.
Should I have a buzzer?
I've looked. Yeah, I've looked at some of my top tens over the years, and there's times I was just plain old wrong. It's fine. I don't care. Right?
Do you think you were wrong though? I mean, I look back at mine, and I'm like, there are some that maybe I don't really still love that much, but I think, well, I loved it at the time. I'm okay with the fact that I loved it then.
A lot.
Except about the Proto Martyr albums. I was never wrong about those.
Yeah. That's still on my list. I got to get into that. That's just elusive to me. I'm going to get into that.
You have Proto Martyr on your greatest albums of all time list, which is impressive.
Me? Yeah.
Yeah, you.
But I didn't even
make. Who do you think I'm talking to?
Well, yeah, I know, I didn't actually make a list of my greatest albums of all time. But I think maybe I just said that we were talking about the best American bands ever, right? And it was like REM and whatever, you know. And I'm like, well, I think Proto Martyr belongs on there. Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were talking about it in the context of
Proto Martyr is better than the Byrds.
In my personal experience, I mean, I've spent a lot more time listening to Proto Martyr. So, you know, depends how you define better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a tough, that was an interesting discussion. I think it grew out of Chris's looking at that Rolling Stone top 500 albums of all time list, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. So
So just for the listeners, while we're in quarantine, one of my projects is to go through the Rolling Stone 500 greatest albums of all time and try to listen to as many of them as I can. So I just figure there are, like, you know, I know all the great bands and I know a lot of the great albums, but there are some that are just, I've never, like, I realized this week, I've never actually sat down and listened to, like, Jimi Hendrix's Are You Experienced from front to back. Like, I know all the great songs on it, but,
yeah.
And then there are obviously some great songs that never made the radio that are on that album. So I'm finding a lot of, like, the quote unquote greatest albums I don't really like all that much. Like Van Morrison's Astral Weeks.
Yeah.
I'm really seconded.
Although David's going to be pissed off.
Yeah. I'm just, I'm finding, like, I'm not liking it a whole lot. I mean, we could probably do, like, segments on this in the future, but
yeah,
the one that's really surprised me is the album by a band called Love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is that? I don't even know. I saw that on the list, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is.
So
I didn't even know there was a band called Love.
Yeah, that's what I was
listening
thinking.
To it, and I'm like, this is a great album. So it was a very nice. Thing to figure out.
Yeah. If Love was from San Francisco instead of LA, they fit in a lot better with the bands up there, you know, than the LA bands were the Byrds, the Doors, and the Beach Boys and Love. And they were more psychedelic. They should have been up in Los Angeles or in San Francisco rather. So anyway.
Yeah.
It's a great album.
Yep. So I would recommend going through and, like, I would say probably at least half of the top 50 I'm already pretty familiar with, but the ones that I'm not, that I'm learning of, are pretty good. So anyway, we should get moving on Barrett's list.
That's fun.
Yeah, like we should. There should be a way that we can. I guess we could just sort of, whenever we feel like it, we can say, oh, this week we're going to talk about number 327, right? And then we could just, like, that was kind of my one idea that I had, is just like throw a random number between 1 and 500 and just talk about it.
I would love that. I'll do that any day.
Isn't that kind of fun? Because then you're forced to be, without knowing what the album is, to discuss it. And if you've never listened, you have to do it. So, okay, we're going to try that on a future podcast after we get caught up on all the new music. So that'll take probably 2 months. So, okay.
Is this number six?
We are up to Barrett's number six. Okay, we just took a short break, but the listeners wouldn't know because of the tricks of the editing process. Right. But I think, did we talk about this at the beginning? So the podcast is brought to you by Balvenie, which is in the Ron Swanson studios, some Ardbeg 10 in my studio, and then Barrett, you've got a martini of some sort.
Yeah, I've got a martini made with, I think it's Tanqueray. So brought to you by Tanqueray.
All right, that's good. So that'll get us, what, $5,000 or $10,000 to, just those mentions will get a little upgrade to somebody's studio. Who's due next? I'm not sure if Anurag's gotten an upgrade lately.
Doing this for 10 years, I still haven't gotten an upgrade.
That's a good point. Yeah, but you usually come here. In normal times, you come here. I mean, this is actually an unusual thing, right, for you not to be live in studio.
Yeah, totally. In fact, my studio upgrade is so lacking that I'm just using this Chromebook laptop here. And, you know, in the pre-recording checks and stuff, I sounded really low and quiet, so if I sound kind of like crap, maybe you should write into Will and say, give Barrett an upgrade.
Yeah, I can understand if that happens. Yeah.
Should we do a GoFundMe? Buy Barrett a studio? Right.
Goal, $200,000.
That's all going to Le Tigre.
Yeah.
One hour, get these notifications like, 1 hour left, $6 of $200,000. You ever see those? Were like super sad.
You feel bad when they have,
worthwhile cause.
Yeah,
just like nothing, just no traction. I'm not gonna get like whatever. Go on this rant about GoFundMe, but as far as like a way to solve any sort of a problem, GoFundMe is not the way.
Maybe not.
No, it's like a popularity contest.
Yeah.
Oh, this homeless person has a really good voice, and why are they on the street? Holy shit! They get like $1 million. Like, it's so fucking stupid. What is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, these things have happened. I mean, my example is extreme, but...
You just like the old days where you just throw shit at homeless people.
No, I'm not. I don't mean to talk about homeless people. What I'm saying is homelessness is a scourge on the country. It's a horrible. It's an embarrassment that we have these many people that don't have a place to live. The ones that want it.
Yeah.
Why are we shoveling so much money at a certain small number of them rather than addressing the problem itself? Right.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that the homeless people can sing are more deserving of a place to live, Barrett.
Totally, yeah. It's like you walk by, like, oh, obviously that guy is like a bum. This guy, he can sing. Wow. Why don't you have a place to live? Fucking bullshit. Anyway.
This is really taking a turn.
Okay, we're almost up to an hour for the first, and we're not even halfway. We'll speed up a little bit.
Number six?
Yeah, number six. Yeah.
Number six is an artist I really like, Kurt Vile. 2015, put out an album called Believe I'm Going Down. And it's a real, real mellow one. I think when we talked about this on the podcast, I probably picked the same song because it's just kind of got the vibe that represents the whole album. Just a really chill and like whatever, man. So it's called That's Life, though. And this album's a lot more acoustic, and you know, it used to be sort of like a guy plugged into electric guitar, plugged into an amp, and blah blah blah. This one's a lot more acoustic and mellow, and I really liked it. So Kurt Vile.
Or to just take a chillax, man, forget about it. Just a certified badass out for a night on the town. Ain't it oh exciting the way one can fake their way through life? Hey, but that's neither here nor there. In a way, how could one ever prove you just putting them all on? That's life though, almost hate to say. That's life though, in every brutal way.
Yeah,
Kurt Vile, and that's his second appearance on one of our top 10 decade lists.
I don't know who else would have the other one. It's not Jason.
I think I know. Wait, is it Anurag?
Nope.
It's not Craig. This is such an American thing. I can't.
It had to be either Nick or Jeremiah.
The album "Smoke Ring for My Halo" by Kurt Vile was on Craig's top 10.
Oh,
it was. Wow.
You guys got it wrong.
Wow.
Yeah, Craig, isn't that fun?
I'm so sorry.
See, we are not.
I literally guessed everybody, but.
Yeah, we are not so predictable, which is cool, right?
I literally said, with all of the correspondence, who do you think it is? Well, it's not Craig.
Right.
I literally said.
Yeah.
What an embarrassment.
So, well, Kurt Vile has a vibe, you know? He's got a great space in the indie rock world, right? Where he, you know, he's got the connection with the war on drugs, and so right. There's a little commonality there. But I think he's really forged a place of his own, and it's really I love that Kurt Vile and Courtney Barnett
duet cool. album. Not to be a spoiler, Courtney Barnett's first album was on my list when I was down to like 12.
Yeah, and that one made two people's lists. So, Chris, is that your number one, Chris?
It was my number one.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, worthy number one. Could have been, you know, like this is such a crazy exercise, really. You know, like it could have been, I could have, like on a different day, been like that Courtney Barnett album is my number three.
Sure. And yeah. Yeah.
The day I did it, it was like off of the list.
It was number 12. Yeah. Yep. Well,
you know, we make decisions for a reason.
Yep. So, okay. Music journalism. What year was this album by Kurt Vile that you selected? Believe I'm Going Down.
This was in 2015.
Okay. So I think Craig's selection was an earlier album, like a 2011 or 2012
more of
or something.
Electric guitar-y sound.
Well, the track that he picked was a pretty acoustic-y one, if I remember right.
Okay.
But yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah.
Kurt Vile's going to be around for a while.
I drank a beer for my whatever I did there. Was that throwing shade? Is that what that would be called?
Not really. You're just making guesses. So maybe he'll be happy that he wasn't predictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good guy. He'll understand it.
I think he will, yeah. Well, are we up to the top half now? Number five.
So far,
again, I love to say this. It's getting serious now, but
it's getting serious.
Five
now.
Albums for the decade. We got some Barrett classics coming up here.
Oh man,
yeah.
Shit. This one at number five. I don't even know what year this was. I didn't write this down. Must have been like 2016, maybe.
Sounds about right. 16 or 17, maybe.
Phosphorescent. The album is Muchacho. And when I heard this, I loved it. I just loved this album so much. And I went out and bought it on vinyl. And then I was like, where is this guy playing? I have to go see him if it's like reasonable. And he was playing at Lincoln Hall, where we saw the Fontaines.
Yeah.
It was sold out, and I bought a ticket on blah, 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 on like secondary market. J.J. and I went down, and it was unbelievable. So great. Everything about it was just in concert, super, just, I don't know, just a great, great show. And fond memories. So that all helped. I don't really listen to this album as much as I, you know, if you would have asked me back then, are you going to be still listening to this a ton in 2020? I'd be like, hell yeah. But I don't really. But looking back, it's super nostalgic for me. And, you know, I think after this exercise, I'm going to find myself wanting to listen to it more again. So song is a song, Terror in the Canyons, which is definitely one of my top songs of the decade.
Phosphorescent.
So I know, Chris, you like that album, right?
I am 250% on board with your pick there. Yes.
250%. That's a good percentage.
I do. Yeah. I love that album. If I had to give an edge, I might give it to 2010's Here's to Taking It Easy, because it has a song Mermaid Parade on it, which you and I both agree is just like a real tearjerker.
Yeah.
That
might have been, you know, always have a bias for like the first thing that you hear. So that might be the only reason that this one beat that one out.
I still can't listen to that song without just like bringing out the napkins. Yeah, it's so sad. It's
so sad.
And then we went and saw him after his 2018 album, C'est la Vie. Mm-hmm. We went to go see him at the Majestic, I believe, and he was great there.
He was great. And,
So I've loved everything that he put out in the decade, and he's great. So I agree completely with pick.
Nice.
I don't really have an excuse for missing the one in Madison. Can't remember what it is. I mean, maybe I do have a good excuse because I don't remember. But
Well, I mean, you're not one. Well, to go in for like kind of like country tinged music, it's just not your wheelhouse.
Sometimes it is, you know, like a lot of the Wilco stuff I love. And Yeah, and I'm not gonna say that I've like just totally dove into these Phosphorescent albums, but it's great when I listen to a song like this. I'm like, man, I could see being completely absorbed by this, and a live band where I'm sure that I mean, just listening to this, he's got to have at least five members of the live band, right? This is not like just like three or four people.
Yeah, I don't remember, but that's
you got to have like a full sound, and it's just great, kind of all encompassing and great.
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. Phosphorescent, that is number five. So number four.
Number four.
Yeah.
Continuing the theme of artists approaching or almost 40. Everybody is over 40 except for Deer Hunter. Is it Bradford Cox?
Yeah.
He's 38 or 9.
Yeah.
So he's a little young pup.
Yeah. But your top three are younger people. So just to preview that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
can we say this about number four? If you got this guy to play at the coffee shop, it'd be like the crowning achievement of the coffee shop, right?
He's one of my top, hold on. I was about to say one of my top 10 artists of all time. That is such a ludicrous statement to make.
That's okay. That's reasonable.
I can't say that. I mean, what would he not? He'd be like knocking off like, no, I can't.
Beach Boys, you're out of here.
Is he better than Fleetwood Mac? Is he better than Guns N' Roses?
Well, if we're talking about top 10, whatever. So I'm just going to withdraw that. Say it's somebody that was one of my current favorites by far, like over the last 25 years, top five for sure. Bill Callahan, who used to record under the name Smog. Recently, he's been, not even that recently, probably 10 years now, been just recording under his real name. And the album Apocalypse made my top 10. I did not make a notation of when this one is from. It seems like it was mid-decade. But Mr. Fact Check over there in the Ron Swanson studio.
Yeah, the Swanson studio will correct you.
Man. Apocalypse was 2011.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Let's erase all that stuff I just said. Anyway, whatever.
I might have had Sometimes I Wish I Were an Eagle. Sometimes I Wish We Were an Eagle. But it was 2009 because I love that album too.
That's a great one. Anyway, the song I picked from the 2011, which is not exactly mid-decade, but you know, close enough. It's called Riding for the Feeling.
It's never easy to say goodbye. To the faces so rarely do we see another one, so close and so long. The room if I'd said enough. No one really answered. They just said, don't go, don't go, don't go, don't go, don't go. Well, all this leaving is never ending. I kept hoping for one more question or for someone to say.
That's Bill Callahan.
Yep, just one of my faves.
Have you seen him play live, Barrett?
Yeah, I saw him at the Annex.
Really? Was he opening for 38 Special?
No. Oh my God. Well, if that were the case, I'd have mentioned it on every single appearance on the podcast, because that would be holy cow, I can't even imagine.
For the listeners who don't recall, the Annex was straight across the street from Baird's Coffee Shop.
Right.
Which is now the, what is that place called now?
Red Zone.
Yeah, the Red Zone, and it's owned by the guy who was a roadie for Ted Nugent, right? And so we're like, why does he not have 38 Special in there?
Yeah, he just doesn't have the swing to get that done. I'm embarrassed for him.
If he would partner with you, then it could probably happen, but he probably doesn't realize the connection you have.
Yeah, he'd be like, hey, who's the guy? Van Zant, right? Like, Van Zant.
There's a Van Zant guy, but the guy you got to connect with is Don Barnes.
Don Barnes.
Yeah.
Be like, Don, I know I'm like nothing to you. I used to be a roadie with Ted Nugent, or even I was even a guitar player, whatever.
Yeah.
But do you know the podcaster Baird Kilmer from Will's Band of the Week? Yeah. You know, it'd be incredible.
I think that would get you together. Yeah. That's an excuse to play this.
The song was Hold On Loosely. The year was 1981. I'm Don Barnes of 38 Special, and these are the sounds of the time.
There you
go. The song was Hold On Loosely.
Whoops. He started up again. All right. I'm trying to find excuses to play these jingles.
Yeah, they're nice. I like them.
Bill Callahan. Yeah. That's totally solid. And he needs a spot on one of our top tens, and that's the first appearance. So excellent. Yeah.
Thing about Bill Callahan is he seems like a very tiny person. Like, he's very small, like he's very skinny, and yet he has this like really full, deep voice.
Super deep voice. Yeah.
He's
a great voice. And
Sean Marshall of Cat Power fame.
Ah.
Yeah. So, Callahan.
Sure.
More famous girlfriend that he had.
So, it was a Waxahachie / what's his name?
Kevin Morby?
Kevin Morby situation going on there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like a Best Coast Waves thing going on.
Katie there we
Crutchfield,
go. We're throwing out our indie rock couples thing.
Okay.
None of us have ever dated anybody famous, right?
What's that?
None of us have dated anybody famous.
Is JJ, my wife, famous?
Well, she is kind of, yeah. Yeah. He's famously cool. He's
locally famous, if like locally means in my household, and then also you guys and her family.
I mean, other than Lana Del Rey.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah.
That was only a couple of years, though.
Other than her, nobody really that famous.
Yeah.
I had one date in college with somebody I thought looked like Belinda Carlisle, and so I thought I was cool. But that was it.
Here's something of interest to Chris.
Yeah?
I mean, Chris probably, like, you could name any celebrity there is, and Chris has probably dated either them or somebody who looked like them.
What?
Mom.
Well, I just think I picture you as a college ladies' man, Chris.
For the record, I've been married 20 years.
Well, I know, but I'm talking about back then, you know?
I did not date a lot in college.
No?
No.
But Chris, my mom went on a date in college with Tommy Thompson.
You're kidding.
What?
Really?
Yeah. My uncle was, so my mom's brother-in-law was in law school with him at Madison and set him up.
So, the listeners may not know, Tommy Thompson is the former governor of Wisconsin. He was really popular. And then I think he was drunk at Lambeau Field at some point, right? That was
drunk at Lambeau Field. He was drunk all the time.
Was that his downfall, though? The drunk at Lambeau Field thing? I don't know. I don't know why.
I do have a friend who brags to me that her
drunk at Lambeau. Hold on.
Yeah, that's right.
You are not drunk at Lambeau Field.
Isn't
that the more damning situation?
Yeah. Chris, you had something profound.
Yeah, I have a friend who constantly brags to me that her mother at some point went on a date with Lionel Richie.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that's big.
I don't know why, Barrett, but when you said my mom once went on a date with, I was filling in the blank, and I was thinking Ted Nugent. I'm glad. I mean, I'm sure Tommy was not as bad as Ted Nugent would have been.
There's a Detroit connection there. The Motor City Madman and
Right. Yep.
Shayla.
Yep.
How does,
I can see it.
Wow, good. Yeah, good on you, Chris, knowing your name and pronunciation.
Yeah.
It's awesome. How, like, none of us knows how that works, though, right? Like, is it the, like, how did you become into being, right?
Is oh, it yeah. Like,
because your parents, like, at any time, whatever, any era, any moment, they came together and you would have been born? Or is it, like, your mom and then, like, maybe some random, like, some other person? What the fuck? How does that work? Nobody knows.
Right? It's life's mystery.
So, I'm pretty sure I know how it works, how babies work.
I just have one more thing.
But I've heard.
I was just going to say.
I think you know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah. Like, wouldn't it be kind of embarrassing if you found out that Wang Dang Sweet Poon Tang was written about your mom? That'd be bad.
Yeah. I can't believe that you just said that word on the podcast.
I don't even know what it means, but when Ted Nugent says something like that, you kind of, you just infer, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's when everybody learned what that meant.
I was at a, I went to a Kiss reunion concert. Every Kiss concert since like 1985 has been like a reunion, right? Or a farewell, right? So it's probably like sometime in the 90s, Kiss was playing, and I went with this friend of mine, like, well, let's go see Kiss. It'd be fun. And, you know, fire went off and stuff blew up and stuff. But the opener was Ted Nugent. And this friend of mine, he's like, I just can't take it. I can't take this. He's just walked out. He came back, but he was like, I gotta, you know, I mean, it was just so terrible. So, but there was a time in the teenage years when I was like 18, 20, that, you know, the Motor City Madman was kind of a fun character. So, all right, this is just terrible. This is,
we're
way,
like, 2 hours into this.
Yeah,
thing
this is off the rails.
Number five.
Yeah, it's bad.
Here's the thing.
No, we're up to number three now.
What?
We're up to number three.
Yeah. One more thing, though. I'm going to get tagged as like, Bear's thing was like 2 hours, whatever. I mean, really, what this is this is a reunion show.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So the fact that it's my top 10 is, that's not why it's long.
No, it's an excuse for us to get together again, right?
We haven't done this in a while. So
absolutely.
I just want to defend myself here.
Good.
So we're up for three. Oh, here's one. Oh, man. I don't really think this is one of the best albums of the decade. Or, well, to me it is, but I wouldn't think anybody else would feel that way. But I saw this band in Austin last year. Do you ever, you guys know we went to South by Southwest? Is that a?
I was unaware of that.
Yeah,
we've never talked about it before.
You were there, dude. Come on. You should remember that. We went there. And
the Poke Beaver, isn't it?
Chris is really worried now. Wait, it might be Black Midi.
Oh, that was a short lister. But, no, I mean, we did a preview and I picked, you know, I did listen to the Austin 500 or whatever, like, picked this out as one of my things I wanted to go see. Went and saw him. Saw him the first time there, it was like pretty decent. Saw him the second time. And was just stunned, just blown away. And I'm talking about, yeah, Chris, you were right. I'm talking about Odeboke Beaver.
Yeah, I am. And
is this the number three album of the decade? Of course it's not. But any band that in 2019 can make this 53-year-old guy, now I'm 54, but then I was 53.
Thanks for clearing that up.
It's my favorite band. It's my favorite band going right now. That's pretty remarkable based on one show and then this album. So I listened to this, I don't know how many times, 100 times in 2019. So I couldn't keep it off.
Don't make me fact check that.
Yeah. So the album, I've never said it out loud. I've never heard anybody else say it out loud, but Ite Koma Hits, and the album, or the song rather, is Bakuro Book. Bakuro Book.
Otoboke Beaver.
Yep.
Itacoma Hits. So every time this band gets brought up, I always think, I wish I had gotten to see them live because the recordings are so energetic and active, and I just wonder how they can pull it off live. And Baird obviously is saying that they do.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I felt a bit self-conscious about putting on the top 10 because... I can imagine in 20 years that maybe I'm wrong, but that people are going to look back and anybody is going to remember what this was. But I know that when I'm pretty goddamn old, I'm still going to be playing this album. I just love it so much.
You'll be in the nursing home. You'll be playing it.
Be in
the
nursing home.
Right. All right. And so let me jump in here. I'm not going to stand for this. I feel bad for putting this on here. You should absolutely put it on here.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was there at the shows with you. And this is like 100% adrenaline. Like just the musicianship, the timing, everything is perfect. Yeah. People are going crazy. Like, so, okay, maybe people don't listen to this album and think it's the best album of the 2010s or whatever. But it was... like just the full experience of the band and being there, it was absolutely incredible. It is one of the best experiences at a show that I've had. People are crowd surfing and the band is like going crazy. It's an experience like I hadn't had. And so I totally understand why you'd have this on here.
All right. Thanks for the backup, buddy.
So I'm going to say no thanks because
we were right next to each other. I would shake his hand, but not because of the
we'd elbow bump.
But I'm
elbow bump over the Zoom here.
I'm saying no thanks though, because I think Chris just said that to make me feel bad because I missed that show. Who the hell knows where I was? You know, when you're in Austin for South by Southwest, you could be anywhere.
Well, I feel bad for missing Chai, but we caught him in Madison.
Yeah,
Madison. That was good.
So what? I don't know. Why don't we can interrupt this podcast with a sobering discussion. When, if ever, will there be another South by Southwest?
2022.
Yeah, it feels like they've built up kind of the infrastructure just to being so big that 1 year of not having it can really, like, it'll crumble a lot of that infrastructure that they have. I mean, they have so many fixed costs now that they weren't able to pay for.
Yeah.
Just because of this 1 year. So who knows what's going to be there? Maybe they have to like slowly build it up again, like they did in the 80s and the early 90s or whatever.
Yeah.
People said that, if they would have had it this year, it would have been like going in 1988.
Yeah.
What did they say though? Like when they first were canceling it and like the economic impact and stuff, it was like $300 million or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, think about the... So obviously the city of Austin is going to be like, we are going to make sure that happens. Like no matter what, they can't just be like, hey, went out of business. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the fact that they've done it there before,
but the organizers themselves.
Yeah. I guess I'll say right now that it's unlikely for 2021 just because, there's too much uncertainty right now, but by 2022, hopefully this whole thing is pretty well under control. And the fact that all those venues are out there, they'll try to build something back up. So hopefully we're all going to get together in March of 2022. Then that's what I'm saying right now. Right.
The concept of, has been proven. Like people know that it exists and it can work. Yeah. It's just, it's gotta work its way back and it's not going to be all at once.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, there's two left. And like I always like to say, number two is the loser because they are not number one.
Could have been number one.
Yeah. But I'm, Barrett might have done this just to be nice to me because,
there has never been the level of agreement among all of the podcasters about the quality of an album as there was about this.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty close. Yeah.
Unanimous praise. So I think I did see somebody at number one. Was it you, Will, or?
No. I had, I think, number four. I'm not sure if anybody had it number one of the decade. A couple of us had it number one of the year.
Okay. Anyway, my number two, the album Fontaine's DC, called Doggerel, an unusual spelling, D-O-G-R-E-L. Not sure what that's about, but this one, a lot of people gravitated toward the kind of post-punky sounds or whatever. This one's it's kind of a traditional, happy, lilting song called Roy's Tune that I really like.
In the night time would kill you stone dead. It was a message I heard when the company said there is no warning and there is no future. I like the way they treat me, but I hate the way they use her. I hate the way they use her. I never really read. I spent the day in bed and my hair was red and my eyes weren't dead. I was a cool kid on the curbstone scene and the lights in my eyes, they were evergreen, like you never seen. In the night time would kill you stone dead. It was a message I heard when the company said there is no warning and there is no future. I like the way they treat me, but I hate the way they use her. I hate the way they use. Well, I never really read. I spent the day in bed and my hair was red.
Fontaine's DC.
Yeah.
From Dublin, Ireland. And I approve.
Dublin City, right?
Now I'm not sure that I had them at number four now, and you have a number two, so should I have had them higher?
Maybe.
It is we've talked about this before. I think it's hard to put it into context when it's less than a year old, or now it's a little more than a year old. But
yeah, display that recency bias.
Right. And I'm not, I would not be surprised if 10 years from now I go back and I'm like, this maybe should have been number one or two.
Right.
And I can't be sure, but it sure was exciting at the time and I still love the album. So,
I love the idea of you as an 80-year-old man, sitting, listening to old podcasts.
Right.
Like Citizen Kane, you and Rosebud.
Right.
God damn it. He should have been number one.
Right.
Yeah, he's going to be like, Fontaine's.
I don't think.
Who's that?
It just.
I have a whole movie, and then at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like the Fontaines DC album, like burning, like, holy shit, that's what he said. He said Fontaines.
You know, I make my 94-year-old friend at the nursing home, and I like tell him, like, this Fontaines album was so great. Might be a hard sell, right? At the nursing home.
He's like, no, I like Chai a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever thought about like being at a nursing home and how it might be not as grim as they say? Because you'd be like super old and you're like looking for some old guy, like, hey, do you like the psychedelic furs? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It wouldn't be as horrible. It'd be fucking horrible, but it'd be somewhat less horrible than we're imagining, because they'll be like our peers and be like,
totally. Yeah.
New stuff. Again?
I don't think it has to be horrible when you're in the situation. Yeah, it's going to be very, you know, personal to the situation, but
yeah. Cannot wait.
By the time we're in like nursing homes, everybody's going to know how to use the internet and all that stuff. Like right now, people in there don't know how to use chats or Zoom or whatever. Yeah. But we're going to be able to. So we're going to be able to like connect with other people in the way that people in nursing homes right now can't.
Yeah, that's true.
They said that like 30 years ago, that would have been like everybody in a nursing home knows how to use a telephone now. You know what I mean? Or
yeah,
like 25 years ago, like everybody knows how to email. So it's always going to be a thing that we don't, like when we're old, that we don't know how to do. There'll be a point where it's just like, I'm not doing that. Like, hey, there's this new way to listen to music.
Yeah. You'll be there you're 10 like, years oh, before I am. So I'm not not worried about it.
Chris, will you come and visit us?
Dude. You are literally like, well, you're pretty much younger. Yeah, that's true.
Like 72-year-old Chris will come and visit 82-year-old Barrett and 86-year-old me or whatever.
He's 7 years younger than me.
Only 7? Oh, okay. I had that all wrong. My math was bad. All right.
I know. I'm a baby. I'm 47 years old and I'm a baby. That's the best thing about this podcast.
God, is that ever young. 47. Oh, my God.
You're the third youngest.
Think of all the things we could do if we were only 47.
How old is Anurag?
About the same age as Chris, I think. Yeah. So I was listening. Okay, let me tell you this. I was there's a TV show I've been watching. Have you guys seen this? I don't know if you guys have HBO. There's a show called Run, and it's really great.
No.
All right. Well, you should watch it. It's fun. And I read a review of it, and the main characters are this guy and this woman, and they're like 35 years old. And I read this review and it said, two middle-aged characters. Wait a minute. They're like 35. That's middle-aged?
No, this is bad writing. Oh, God. That's bad writing. Misunderstanding about middle ages. Middle age doesn't mean approximately halfway through your life. That's not what it means.
No, I think you got to be like 45, right? Or more.
Even older. It means between elderly and adult. So it means somewhere between like 40 and 70. It really does. It's like, does not mean halfway between your life.
You know, I think it was bad writing, but still it was like, I thought those people were young. Okay. Yeah. Barrett, what is the greatest album of the decade?
Man, I'm having thoughts. I'm going to delete this. This is not my number one anymore.
What?
I'll go with it. I did really love this album. It is.
This is on somebody else's list, by the way. It was David's number 3.
Oh, wow. Good on David. I thought it might have appeared on maybe one more than that, maybe like two other ones. But anyway, this might not even be her best album of the decade. I like the one that came out after it at least as much, but there wasn't a song on it that I liked as much as the one that I picked. So I'm talking about Mitski, right? Totally unheard of artist, right? Introduced her to the world here. Anyway, the album was Puberty 2, and the song probably Well, definitely in my top small handful of songs of the year, or of the decade, rather. Your Best American Girl, just love everything about it, the way it sounds, sentiment, the structure, everything, just super exciting. So hopefully you'll enjoy this short clip.
Mitski. So yeah. Barrett, I remember when we talked about this album on the podcast and you talked about this song, and it was just like you were so blown away by the song. It's completely appropriate that you have it here, because that was like one of the most just amazing descriptions of like how a song just like completely just... You were just like, I guess it's Anurag's term, right? Blown away, but I can't think of a better term, but you were just completely, phrase.
So she is an Asian American, and I think the idea is that the song, and I haven't read this, but just based on the song, the lyrics and stuff, falls in love with somebody that's, the all-American boy or whatever. Right. So she's trying to be, the best American girl that she can be. And maybe doesn't feel that she's fully that way because, because of her heritage and stuff, which is really horrible and sad. And then at one point she's like, okay, I accept it. This is it. And then at the end, she kind of pulls it back and is like, I think so. It's just heartbreaking to me, and just really, really love it. So,
yeah, we mentioned before the Phosphorescence song that makes me get emotional every time I hear it. This song does the same thing, and you can see it from the video that accompanies the song, because it essentially just spells out like what's going on here. Where,
oh my god, I didn't know there was a video, dude.
Oh, you got to watch the video.
Yeah,
it's her, and then she's like flirting with this kind of Anglo guy, American guy, and he shuns her for, your kind of typical American white beauty girl, and she's just heartbroken over it, and you can just see the pain and like hear the pain in the song, and it's just all about, like doing your best but just never being good enough for reasons that you can't control. And it's just like, it's so emotional, and it just gets me every time. So you gotta go watch that.
Yeah, I will. So
yeah, good pick.
That was it.
And then you guys And then you guys went and saw her, and she's an amazing performer, right?
That was unbelievable. I mean, Will, I know you loved it. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you could have loved it as much as I did. I was like, this is I don't know. This is a performer that if she wants to become unbelievably internationally famous, she could be. I just feel like her, you know, just the her talents just pointing in that direction. I'm not describing that well.
Well, if you go back and if you listen to the Nicholas and Jeremiah podcast, Jeremiah saw Mitski, I guess it was an early career thing, because he said she was acoustic guitar in her, like really minimalist, and he said it just completely blew him away. And then isn't that interesting, because then by the time Barrett and I saw her, it was like this just huge performance art. And I mean, you're just watching her and you're just saying, okay, this is an amazing performance artist. And then she finished that tour after we saw her. And I remember reading, she's like, I might be retiring from music. You know, somebody with that talent, there's no way, right? 3 years from now, she'll have another album and another tour. You know, we certainly hope. But boy, what a talent.
Yeah, she actually, we saw her, whatever, it was like in, it was in 2019, right? In the spring.
Right. Yep.
Before that, so the album came out in whatever year it was, but
it was probably the fall of the prior year, or maybe even early in 2019. Not sure.
But she played at Collectivo in Milwaukee. So at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
So that's probably the same tour that Jeremiah saw. And I remember like, oh shit, I gotta try to go see this. And it was sold out. It was like two blocks from my mom's house. I'm like, oh my God, I should have tried harder, because I probably could have gone. But anyway.
Now you got to fork over like $40 every time you want to see her now.
Yeah. Like, yep.
Yeah. I almost saw the Beatles at the Cavern Club. At least I got to see at Shea Stadium.
Beatles play the Club de Wash on West Washington? I don't think they ever did.
Probably.
Yeah. So the Club de Wash burned down, and then they put a gas station in there, and now the gas station's been torn down. There's some new thing going up there.
Wait, what?
Madison trivia for you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I just watched the documentary Smart Studios story.
You just watched that?
I just watched it this week.
You're late to the game.
Really good.
Yeah, my friends have kind of a cameo there. They recorded that. They were called The Weeds. I don't know. You might have seen them. They were like just kind of mentioned a little bit in passing because they never hit it big. But they were kind of like, this is fun.
Surprised at how the Madison sound had an effect on the Seattle sound. And, yeah, it was pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Check it out. You can watch it for $1.99 on Vimeo, I believe. It's called Smart Studio Story.
Okay, do that. Madison trivia. And Madison, our big Madison band disc, right? They just got like, they were on this great career trajectory and then the COVID thing hit. So like, they have to just like put everything on hold, and hopefully a year from now they get back into the indie rock game, right?
Well, yeah, that's the case for all these people.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, their big debut albums come out in the midst of COVID. And sucks.
So, Chris, I suppose we should probably give an evaluation.
Like my girl Hazel English. What?
We're here to evaluate Barrett's top 10 and decide whether it's worthy. What are we going to say?
That's a strong list.
Yeah, I think it's totally solid, Barrett. I'm completely happy with it.
It's obviously not correct. My list is the correct one.
But Barrett has earned another. How much has he earned? 5 more years on the podcast, maybe, for this?
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's great. I mean, this has just been great. I thought it would be appropriate. We're at the end of a decade, even though Craig thinks the decade ends after this year, but he's wrong. I just thought it would be fun for everybody to do this, and I think it's just been great. If you accumulate all these lists together, man, what a great set of albums.
Totally.
Yeah.
Looks like we have nine lists. Let's see. We've got Anurag, Barrett, Chris, Craig, David, Jason, Jeremiah, Nicholas, and me. That's nine. That's nine. 90. And with the overlaps, it's probably 75. You can't go wrong, right?
Yeah. Listen to all of them.
Do it.
Totally.
Barrett, I mean, this is all about Barrett, this podcast. Any closing remarks, recommendations, anything you'd like to add?
I'm actually scrambling to find this thing.
I should also mention that I watched the Beastie Boys story.
Is that any good?
Apple
TV. I saw that it exists. Is it worth it?
I, of course, am a lifelong Beastie Boys fan. Listened to them first in 1985, 1986, when License to Ill came out. And it's fine. It's pretty good. You know, there's nothing new in there that if you're a Beastie Boys fan, you don't already know. But it's pretty interesting. One of the great bands of the last, like, if you're going to put together a list of a band over the last 30 years that checks all of the, you know, the boxes for greatest American bands, like they have hits, they have albums that are critically acclaimed, and I mean, you know, popularity, longevity, they've got everything. So definitely, if you're a youngster and listen, you want good music, go listen to the Beastie Boys. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think in my case, as an aging rocker, it would be very worthwhile for me to watch that, because I literally, my familiarity with them is you got to fight for your right to party, you know? And I'm like, that was really super fun and catchy, but I just never delved into their catalog at all. So yeah, I'm going to watch the documentary.
Hit, and then they moved on, yeah. And they made Paul's Boutique after that, which they're kind of rebelling against what they were before. And it's just it's a sampling masterpiece. It's
Paul's Boutique is so great.
Yeah.
All right. It'll be worth my 2 hours or whatever it is. I'll check it out.
I'm ready for you to drop in my fake quote here. The takeaway, which is, you know, it's better to aim high and to fail than to aim low and to succeed. Because if you aim high and fall short, even in the failure, there remains an echo of glory. Which I love that quote, but I can't say it as like a, I just can't say it as a, I can't like be an actor.
I think that is definitely the tagline for this podcast, which is the echo of glory.
Great quote.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah,
you should change the website
at aiming high than to succeed aiming low. And we at Will's Band of the Week have set our sights very high, so high, in fact, that even failure in it will have an echo of glory.
Will's Band of the Week, echo of glory. That's the new tagline on the on the website.
I think that's unbelievable. I wish somebody associated with the Packers had said that, because that's fucking...
There's kind of no doubt that we aim high every week and we pretty much fail every week too. So that's, you know, it's pretty accurate.
Glory. That notion, just that idea, an echo of glory and failure, like the coolest fucking thing you've ever heard. To me,
that's pretty good. Yeah,
pretty fucking great.
All right, let's sign off. This officially ends the decade for the Will's Band of the Week podcast.
Hold on. Give you a big editing job.
It'll be a big editing job, but I can do it. I'm up to the task.
It's our second best of the decade podcast. So that tells you everything you need to know right there. It's the second time we've done a best of the decade podcast. So yeah. We've been doing this a long time. That was my point.
Okay, we'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom,
and Australia. You can subscribe or download the podcast wherever podcasts are available or from our website, willsband.net. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.